Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I'm not worried about the Green Bay game ruining C.J. Stroud or anything, even though he looked a little more jittery in the second half of that football game. I am worried if it turns into a long-term thing where if C.J. continues to get beat up this season, that it has some sort of detrimental effect on him long-term. Like, I don't think that's an unreasonable concern. You know who else holds that concern, Seth? A handful of texters, and B, Mina Kimes of ESPN.
Here is my fear with CJ Stroud. He is beginning to be the new Justin Herbert for me, where every week on tape, I'm like, this dude is putting out some of the best throws I've seen of any quarterback, and yet everything around him is crumbling. He's constantly in third and long. They're constantly running the ball with no success on early downs. I am starting to really worry because we're about halfway into the season. This should be a Super Bowl team, but Alex, it feels like the infrastructure around him is not good enough right now.
Okay, which is weird because the only thing they did with the infrastructure this offseason was retain and upgrade.
Except for the one spot they didn't was at center and left guard. Well, they retained what? You don't know what Juice Scruggs is as a center. You don't know what Kenyon Green is as a guard. And, Kenyon Green, to his credit, has stayed healthy. That was the big obstacle early on. But it's not really playing out with good offensive line play. No. And then with your offensive tackles, They're not impressive run blockers. They're just fine in pass protection. But some of the miscommunications between the offensive tackles and the running backs or the tight ends, like it's a whole offense issue. It's not just the offensive line when it comes to the pass protection. Dalton Schultz just looks lost and confused half the time. Cade Stover has not really come along as a blocker. He's had nice moments and what have you. But there's just too much clunkiness mentally, physically, everywhere else across the board that, I don't think CJ's operating any differently than he did last year. It's just that this offense is not taking a step forward.
Yeah.
They're a middle-of-the-road NFL offense. You don't have to get advanced stats on this.
No.
They're not scoring enough points.
Which is what matters. Last I checked, that's what the offense's job is. Yes, I agree with that. We got a texter requesting injury updates on the Texans. We'll get you some in a couple of minutes here. We'll update you on the injury board for the Texans here and who was practicing yesterday, because that is newsworthy. Now, we played that Mina Kimes earlier in the 7 o'clock hour. That was actually on a podcast that she was doing with Alex Smith, the former San Francisco and Kansas City and Washington quarterback, former number one overall pick, who himself has throughout his career had to navigate a lot of muddy pockets on some bad football teams. Texans aren't a bad football team, fortunately. They just have a lot of muddy pockets. Alex Smith not as worried as Mina Kimes seems to be.
I'm so torn on this because I am an enormous CJ Stroud fan. I have two sons that both want to play football, and my oldest wants to play quarterback. And I've thought about this. Like, if I were to pick one quarterback that you could like watch and be like, this is what it looks like. This is what playing quarterback looks like. I think I would pick CJ Stroud. When you talk about like classically, beautifully playing quarterback, like it is so fundamental. He makes it look so easy. He is so dialed in. He is so sound. It's so crazy to say about a second year player. Like it's absurd. I even think in some ways he's more fundamental than Joe Burrow. He's had, two rough games, maybe two of his roughest games of his career this season. Both of them, I think, are two of the best teams in football, though, they played against. He went on the road to Minnesota and he went on the road to Green Bay. Watching that film, though, there wasn't anything he missed out there. There wasn't a lot of opportunities. This O-line struggled. They got pick stunted 5 different times up front. I think they're going to be fine.
Okay.
Pick stunted. Yep. That's where the awareness of the offensive line comes in, where an offensive lineman is getting a linebacker comes in, hits Kenyon Green upside the head from the side. He gets thrown off into outer space, and then the running back is trying to pick up a looping defensive lineman or what have you. It's a general lack of awareness. This is something that a lot of people, you can pick up with your naked eye. There's just way too many instances of Texans offensive linemen standing, staring off into nothingness while somebody that would presumably be in his peripheral vision is running unimpeded to the quarterback. That's frustrating.
Yeah.
You don't need a PhD in offensive line play to understand that, okay, these guys just they're not getting it. They're not seeing it the way that we need them to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the frustrating thing. And again, some of that just comes back to just like the fundamental basics of how you're operating as an offensive line. They just don't do it the right way right now.
I don't know how old Alex Smith's kids are. He just said he has two sons that want to play football. One wants to play quarterback. Yeah. So I don't know if the one who wants to play quarterback is 6 years old or 14 years old. I just know that I'm going to say this blindly without having ever met nor seen this kid. He's got to be one of the most fearless kids out there because he just watched his dad almost lose his leg playing quarterback in the NFL. And now I want to go do that thing, Dad, where you had to have 18 surgeries because you were playing that position.
I'd almost rather, if I had a son playing football and I were Alex Smith, I would rather them like stumble onto an embarrassing sex video from college than to stumble onto a picture of me getting my leg destroyed on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, you think the things you worry about from your past that might show up on the internet.
Yeah.
I think my leg getting the blown.
It wasn't
even the injury itself. It's the surgeries afterwards.
Yeah.
The leg that didn't look anything like a human leg, all of that stuff. Yeah.
I think I'd rather... Your example's rather extreme. I think I'd rather maybe stumbling across a YouTube of me public speaking in high school or college where I completely wet myself, you know what I mean? Where I was just absolutely terrible. My kids don't need to see any of that other stuff. Like that's
No, they definitely don't. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. There's the two very unsavory alternatives.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
They find out that mom was an adult film actress or something.
Right.
Like
no,
that's something you don't want your kids finding out on the internet.
I understand. I'd rather see them breaking my leg than that. That's for me. That's just me. So Alex Smith, not worried about C.J. Stroud. The injury updates for the Texans. Azeez Al-Shaair still out. The big news, the good news, Kamari Lassiter, Henry Toa both back and limited in practice. Seth Lassiter is the big one, especially considering not just this Colts game where you were beat deep on a bunch of plays, including Kamari Lassiter getting beat on one play that wasn't completed. With the Jets coming up and all the weaponry they have, with the Lions coming up and all the weaponry they have, and on and on and on.
The biggest thing with Kamari Lassiter and some of the whiffs that he's had, like some of the rookie whiffs that he's had, is that it doesn't hurt the Texans when they're facing guys like Trevor Lawrence or Anthony Richardson. Yeah, even when it hurt the Texans versus Anthony Richardson, Anthony Richardson also single-handedly lost the game for them by missing a wide open receiver I don't know whose fault it was on that, the coverage bust on that. But he still allows the defense to do other stuff. You don't have to make up for it. You can be more aggressive in certain instances when you've got him out there at cornerback. So I like getting him back a lot. I wouldn't worry. I mean, it's a broken bone, you know, and if he's back out there, the bone is healed, and I'm not worried about it affecting his
player. Oh, being like something that's going to be nagging or something
that.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
It's been like a hairline fracture of his scapula.
Yeah. Ugh. That sounds painful.
I don't even know. It's funny. Yeah, there's something about the... You know when you're a kid, your scapulas, you know, like teenage boys or like, you know, 12-year-old boy, you know, their scapulas are just so defined. They just stick way out.
My brother used to like to like make his stick way out.
Yeah, because you're just
like
a skinny
chicken wing.
Kid. Yeah, yeah, and you're those the scapula is out there. Yeah, yeah, there's something that looks vulnerable about the scapula. I don't like hearing about a broken scapula.
Yeah, no, you need a search party to find mine now. This is my scapula.
Right. Yeah. When was the last time you saw your scapula in a hand mirror?
In a hand mirror.
You were looking up, you're checking your back for moles. You're like, there's the old scapula.
Hey, how are you feeling, by the way? You sneezed earlier in the show and you said something about kind of your rib.
I'm pretty sure I definitely had a broken rib or have a broken rib, but I'm not peeing blood or anything, so I'm not going to go see a doctor about it. I don't have time for that.
What did you, I remember you had the one incident where the parking arm hit you in the head.
The barrier arm at the parking garage hit me in the head.
And then what was your fall again?
What were the back-to-back home games? I can't remember the...
It was the Jacksonville and Buffalo games in weeks 4 and 5.
That was the week in which I took 4 shots to the head in 8 calendar days.
Yeah.
And had kind of a rough go of it. Yeah. That was, when was that? My memory's a little sketchy.
Late September, early October. Yeah, it was like 3 weeks ago.
But that was also when I fell and hit my ribs.
Oh, that's right. You fell on the way to Chipotle, right?
No. I got hit by the parking barrier on the way to Chipotle.
Oh, okay.
I hit my ribs when I passed out in the middle of the night.
That's right. You passed out multiple times.
And I passed out three times in one night, and at least, and I... And I don't know what I'm pretty sure I hit the counter or something with my ribs.
Oh.
Because But it's fine. I'm a sports radio host, Sean. This is not I'm not out there trying to work on a road.
Well, no, it hasn't affected your work. You've had some really good shows. I just, when you sneezed earlier, you said, you kind of muttered my broken rib, and I'm like,
I haven't been able to sleep very well for the last few weeks.
Okay.
But it's getting incrementally better every day.
Yeah, sure.
So I feel like, all right, it's healing as it goes. And then I'll forget about it. And someday when I'm 78, I'll get a chest x-ray done or something. They're like, wow. You've been walking around with three really poorly healed broken ribs this
31
entire time.
Years you've been walking around with this whole
That's
thing.
Right. I'm going to wait for it to heal and then check to see if it healed properly. And then they'll have to maybe go in and re-break the ribs or something.
But, there you go. We've got some good texts in response to Brian Cashman. Maybe we should reset. Hey, Ben, you still have the Cashman audio pulled up. Here's Brian Cashman on the MLB Network being a little biatch.
How about winning the pennant? How does that mean to you? Let me hear.
It means a lot, and I hate the 15-year thing because it doesn't it completely forgets and discounts that that some other organization cheated us when we were all the way in the end. You know, if you knew what was going on, I don't think they would be advancing at that during that time thing. I think we would have been advancing. So I hate that 15-year thing because I don't think it accurately reflects history.
Okay, first of all, if you're going to be a little bitch about it, say their name. Like, say the Astros. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there was this one team
thing that I was like, yeah, I'm going to subtweet them.
Give me some cheese. I'm a rat. Responses on the text page to that. Lance McCullers threw 24 straight curveballs at your ass. You knew exactly what pitch was coming.
Yeah. It was okay, you guys just couldn't hit 24 straight curveballs. All right, let's call it what it is. It was too loud for the garbage cans to work in 2017, so the Astros weren't even trying. Yeah.
Someone
2019,
says,
and then he's doing the dirtiest. He's John-boying it and lumping 2019 into that, too, when it was like, no, you got your asses whooped in 2019.
You got swept in 2022. Someone says, what about the other 14 years? Exactly.
Yeah,
including the years you lost to the Astros. Text message, I don't want the Dodgers to be put. That's a good one. This is a very Sean type of look at. I don't want the Dodgers to be put on par with the Astros during this era. A second ring over the Yankees puts them right there with us. One more for the Yankees doesn't matter and really only puts juice back on the Astros and Yankees rivalry.
Okay, good. Yeah, I like that thinking. All right, so I'm a hardcore Yankees fan, I suppose. I'm going to pinch my nose and vote for the Yankees. All right.
Whatever you're doing, if you're rooting for anybody in this World Series and you live in Houston, you're pinching your nose in some way. This World Series sucks. Yankees scored 3 total runs in the 4 losses to the Astros that year in the 2017 postseason.
It's
a fair point. Yeah, like score some runs then, you know, like in the 4 losses. Yankees versus Dodgers is Stalin versus Hitler round 2. That's a little and the Astros are America coming to save the day. That is a biased viewpoint that I
did. You know what, man? I'll tell you what. It's funny. Obviously, it's always dicey comparing anybody to Hitler. And yet,
even the
Dodgers, there was a time in this country when people who had actually fought in World War II, one of their favorite TV shows was Hogan's Heroes. And one of the most beloved characters on that show was a big fat Nazi by the name of Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah.
So yesterday there was a clip from Andy Reid where he said, I know nothing about the signing of the trade for DeAndre Hopkins.
Right.
Because it wasn't official yet, so he wasn't going to say something. Yeah. But, I mean, Andy Reid has a bit of a Sergeant Schultz look to him.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, chubby face, you know, mustache and everything. So I photoshopped Andy Reid's face onto Sergeant Schultz's body.
You did?
And I tweeted it out with the caption, I know nothing. But I'm like, you know what? Enough people aren't going to get this reference, and they're going to think it's just me comparing Andy Reid to a Nazi.
Yes.
That I don't feel like it. I just don't feel like dealing with it.
So you never tweeted it out, or you tweeted it?
No, I took it down. I'm like, all right, I don't want to deal with this crap.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah, because
I don't want to deal with a bunch of, like, grandchildren of World War II veterans who thought that Sergeant Schultz was hilarious, taking up for their grandfathers in absentia. Yeah.
Right. Because there's a perfect...
Like, I can't believe you would invoke Hitler in this. Oh, you're a bastard.
Because there's a perfect explanation as to why you're not being insensitive or anything.
Right. No, but it doesn't matter what the explanation is.
Right, then you have to actually execute...
Sports radio shock jock compared Andy Reid to a Nazi.
Well, and then you've got to actually explain it, too, which that's work. You know what I
and
mean?
And it never, right, and explaining it, doesn't look. And then at some point, somebody from corporate is like, maybe you should throw in an apology there. And then I quit. So I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to cut this off at the pass.
Yeah, I'm rooting for the worst World Series ever, somebody says. World Series apathy reigns supreme. Here's the other problem. Last year's World Series sucked so bad. It was the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. Can you think of a more bland, World Series than Rangers and Diamondbacks? So you know, Seth, all the TV rating stories, even if the ratings are down from, like, say, baseball's heyday, that there's going to be all sorts of stories about how the Yankees and the Dodgers, and look at all the eyeballs that they're drawing, because it at the very least, they can talk about how much better it is than last year's World Series.
If you go back to, I mean, where now any World Series game typically doesn't do as well as your any given Monday night football game.
Not even close.
Yeah. Not even close, right. Yeah, like they're not even, like they're never in the top rated, you know, sports events watched per year. The NFL just dominates all
literally
of that.
96 of the top 100 TV shows are NFL games.
You go back to 1980, and there were a couple games in that World Series, the Phillies versus the Royals, that had a 56 share.
That was a good World Series.
But that was where the majority of people watching TV that night were watching the World Series. Yep. Baseball was a different, it was in a different place in America.
It was truly America's
pastime. It's not like that at all anymore.
No, it was America's pastime, no doubt. All right, let's talk about C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud was looking right at the media yesterday and said, hey guys, if you're going to say this after Green Bay, then you better say this after the Colts game if things get better. We'll hear from C.J. Stroud coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
C.J. Stroud was asked yesterday in his weekly press conference what he can learn from plays where the pressure comes very, very quickly. He saw lots of those against Green Bay on Sunday. He answered the question and then I think kind of was making a request of the assembled media there. Take a listen.
Honestly, I mean, I would say, you know, just for me, just getting the ball out on time, being able, you know, to try to stay comfortable after getting hit, you know, really just, you know, just trying to make everybody around me better. You know, I got the utmost respect and, you know, a trust in my line. You know, one outing doesn't make you a definition. You know what I mean? There's plenty of games that you can go look at the film and they did an amazing job, you know, so I don't believe in the banter and all this. I don't even see it. I'm not really on social media, but you know, I hear about it, and you know, I just like you guys beat them down, I want y'all to praise them as well, you know. So this next week, I know that the protection is going to be great. I can't wait for it, you know. And you know, I want y'all to do the same thing y'all doing now, and just, you know, be more positive, you know. But same time, it's the league we in, you know. We're not feeling bad for ourselves. We grown men. We can take it. You know what I mean? And I know that they want to be better, and they will.
Yeah, there's the whole thing about, like, all right, well, we want you to be more positive. But, like, all right, okay, generally, I mean, if anything, Houston media has never been accused, I don't think, of being, like, overly vicious when it comes to...
No.
It's the opposite. It's the opposite. I mean, half the questions are like, isn't it awesome being you?
Right.
Come on. They deserve criticism and scrutiny. So that's... he's backing up his guys. He's defending them. I do worry still sometimes that CJ is still a young player and doesn't understand that maybe, you know, like Laremy Tunsil's whole way of going about his business isn't the ideal or the paradigm for offensive linemen in the NFL. But it's right. They're underperforming. They're not as good as they should be. And they're going to get criticism for that.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. This is not us criticizing, say, the offensive line from, you know, a few years ago, which, by the way, also included Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. Like, they've both been here since 2019, you know? So it's, but it's not like we're criticizing an offensive line that is understaffed, that has lesser physical talent and physical skills, and we're just piling on a group that probably shouldn't be out there in the first place. They've invested multiple first and second round picks and tens of millions of dollars into this group, and several of them have been here for, well, they've all been here multiple years.
Yeah.
And your two tackles, your two highest paid guys, have literally been, this is literally their sixth season with the team right now.
They are on a team that's withstood the injuries to Joe Mixon and Nico Collins and various, you know, last week the defense is playing without five defensive starters.
Mm-hmm.
The weakness on the team remains the position group that's 100% healthy. You know, like you've missed a few snaps out of Laremy Tunsil, but for the most part, they've been 100% healthy the whole season, and they are the big, huge blemish. And I would include the tight end position in that as well. I mean, because both as one of the reasons that the tight ends haven't gotten as involved is that they're being used as pass protectors, and yet they're not good at that either.
Yeah.
So that's where Bobby does have to. There was one point yesterday where CJ had said that, you know, he's asked for them to put more on his plate, and what I hear when I hear that is like, listen, I can handle a blitz. I don't need nine bodies in around trying to perform, frankly, an imperfect cocoon. Mm-hmm. If you ask me, if I'm a quarterback that feels like I can recognize and diagnose blitz and coverages and everything else like that, then don't do me the disservice of keeping Dalton Schultz in to pass block when he's not good at it, when he could be out on a route.
Yeah.
Please, just let me cook.
Right.
You know, I would rather see the best way you can use Dalton Schultz in pass protection at this point is to get him as close to the sideline as possible. Just get him the hell away. Because the more he attracts a defender closer to the line of scrimmage, the more bad things are going to happen, all right?
The best way that you can help with this is to get as far away from it as possible.
Yes,
that's
right,
what you
right.
just said. Oh, yeah. My God, and it's true. It's true. Okay, so
it's like I'm going to fight off a bear by wearing a suit made of honey.
Right.
The more bodies you put close to CJ Stroud, the more you're going to
with his meat jacket walking up to a bunch of bears.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I will be sitting in the press box watching the game on Sunday, and when the Texans come out for their first offensive series, what formation will excite you the most to see on first and 10?
Empty. QB empty.
That'll excite you, right?
Nothing but CJ standing by himself
him
in
cook.
The backfield.
CJ
there,
with
yeah.
a chef's hat on top of his helmet and a spatula in one hand and a football
right.
in the other.
Yes,
yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
And
I say go old school Cliff Kingsbury on their butts. I don't give a damn. Let's pretend we're in college, all right?
Yeah.
Let's just get out there. I'm exaggerating, but I don't like Romo was saying on the broadcast. I thought it was a good point that Romo was making last week. It was just and I know you said that the Clint was echoing it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Just not so many condensed formations. Don't try to pretend you're somebody you're not. You guys are not a team that can line up. And as Bum Phillips would say, or I guess originally it was Bear Bryant, can yoursen beat mine's? How did he frame it? Hisens can beat yoursen or whatever.
Yeah, hisens can be. I'm sure we'll get plenty of mangled text on what exactly was
go
said.
Go ahead and spell that out.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever they know it is, whenever there's a rugby scrum element to it. Whenever you're lining up like that, there's almost a feeling like, well, yeah, because when it comes down to men being men, we're just going to line up across from you, and we're going to impose our will.
Well,
dude, your offensive tackles, their heads are at the Dior store. They're not thinking about physically mashing people. You're not that team. You're a finesse team.
Do you remember them lining up this much last season with everybody so crammed in like they are this year?
Like
as frequently it feels. Maybe it's because they're worse at it this year than they were last year.
I have to look at Texans cap is good for stats like this.
Yeah. Like formations.
Tell me your condensed formations this year compared to last year.
Give it to us, Cap. Devin White is the newest Houston Texan, former Pro Bowl linebacker with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, signed as a free agent by the Philadelphia Eagles to a 1-year, $4 million deal in the offseason. Never saw the field for the Eagles. Could not beat out N'Kobe Dean for playing time. So they cut him, the Eagles did, back on October the 8th, and yesterday he became a Houston Texan. He was practicing yesterday as a Texan. Here was D'Amico Ryans talking about how much do you think that Devin White can help the squad.
Yeah, excited to get Devin, and here we'll work with him and see where he is. All right, try to get him caught up to speed to see, you know, if he can help us. So it's this opportunity for Devin to compete, come in, learn how we do things, and we wanted to add him to, you know, give him an opportunity to see where he can come in and help us. That's what it was about. See how he can fit in, how he can help us.
And you think you think he'll be active on Sunday for this?
I think he'll be active, and I think that the thing with Devin White is I don't think he's any different athletically, even though CJ Stroud did run away from him twice last year.
Yeah. I'll get that audio. Keep talking.
Yeah. So they I think he's the same guy. It's just, I think from when he was a young player, you know, the Texans have brought in multiple guys who are kind of like this, guys who have a lot of physical ability who flashed earlier in their career. Dez King was one of those guys. He was all pro in his second season, I believe. Mm-hmm. Go back to Philip Dorsett. The defensive back,
Vernon Hargraves.
Tampa. Vernon Hargraves. Yeah. Like guys that flashed when they were young and then just kind of fizzled out. Devin White is kind of in that territory where he's capable of making some really nice plays, bunch of tackles for a loss, sacks, all those things. But his athleticism doesn't always translate into pass coverage. There's a lot of instances of him. It's really easy for offensive linemen to block him if they get their hands on him.
Yeah.
So he's been a guy that maybe with a Vita Vea in front of him or somebody like that, when he's protected, he does really, really well. But it's just he hasn't developed into a complete and total NFL linebacker. So I think there's still things that you can use for him for immediately. But then the next question is, all right, does D'Amico figure out a way to really utilize his talents and get the most out of him just as a starter at some point? Who knows?
Yeah,
but they've got him in the building and they'll see.
If he were to see the field on Sunday, are there certain situations you think he's better suited for?
I'd say
for
third down, probably.
Third down? Okay.
Yeah. Like as a potential blitzer or,
Gotcha. Here is C.J. Stroud, who liked to point out, he pointed this out on Micah Parsons' podcast at the Super Bowl and was asked about it again yesterday. He had a couple good plays, good reps last year in that Tampa Bay game that involved him beating Devin White.
I didn't get to talk to him about it yet. I'm not even sure if he's seen it, but I just talked to him. You know, he seems like a real good dude. You know, playing against him last year, he's a heck of a ball player. You know, he's really fast. But you know, that play, I felt like I got up a little bit. But you know, I got out of bounds too. You know, I ain't trying to get hit by him. But you know, yeah, I think he's a great player, great addition. You know, so shout out to Nick for doing his thing once again. But yeah, I'm in love with that choice that Nick made, and you know, I think he'd be a great addition to this defense. Go.
Look at Nick getting his flowers from QB1 right there. That was pretty cool. I think Devin White was also the defender on that play where CJ and Devin Singletary, there was a Singletary run to the left, and CJ just, I think it was supposed to go to the right, but Singletary doubles back to the left and threw an option pitch to CJ as he was going out of bounds.
Yeah, that's right.
I think White was in on that play too, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so I think the comparison we used yesterday was like he's a really elite version of Kamu Grugier-Hill, where people get excited about Kamu Grugier-Hill because he would show up. But on the plays where he wasn't showing up, he was nowhere near where he was supposed to be. There's a little bit of that element to Devin White where, yeah, he shows up, and when he shows up, it's impressive. But there's other times where he disappears too easily.
Yep.
And that's like, and being a complete linebacker, that's where he's been lacking a little bit. I think this is not like me being overly critical or anything. That's what the market said in the offseason. He got a 1-year, $4 million deal with Philadelphia, and then he didn't play at all for Philadelphia this year. So it's not like people around the league are saying like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Devin White is available. He was available to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Up next, okay, I know the World Series is getting ready to start. I know generally speaking we're used to getting ready for actual games right now instead. A lot of Astros fans have their eyes on the offseason. A former general manager gives you estimates on what it's going to cost and how many years to bring back your big free agents, including your third baseman, Astro fans. Would you do it for this dollar amount in this many years? We'll play that little game coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Alex Bregman is going to be a very rich man. He already is a very rich man. He's already signed one contract extension in his life for nine figures. He's about to do it again sometime in the next several weeks. Jim Bowden, former MLB GM, now writer for The Athletic. And I like when he does these, you know, he kind of summarizes the free agency pool or, you know, anything transactional. He's a pretty good read. He's got the top 45 free agents in here, Seth, for the upcoming offseason and what he expects them to get, you know, with his knowledge of the marketplace and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, he expects Juan Soto to become the second player to get north of $600 million. Shohei was obviously the first. 15 years, $622 million for Juan Soto. Whoever gives it to him, he doesn't. He doesn't. He doesn't predict who the teams that give these contracts are going to be. He's just saying this is what the value should be for this guy on the marketplace. 15, so 40, over $40 million a year for Juan Soto, which makes, man, Shohei getting $70 million a year. Like, it's so, like, he's, Shohei is like Mahomes on steroids. Like, remember when Mahomes got that deal? And then every other QB deal for a while was like the best one other than Mahomes.
Right.
That's
right,
where we are. Yeah. We're going to be in that in baseball forever, probably. I mean, well, that's how big the gap is right now.
You know who was like that was Deshaun Watson, too. Which, and I like, I know a lot of people say
guaranteed money
Watson,
he was.
Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
Basically the same performance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was that just, I mean, when you, it was, so if you take the Deshaun Watson contract out of it in terms of justifiable paying guys that much, Juan Soto up there. Shohei Ohtani obviously up there. Alex Bregman, it's not quite as clear. He's not in that Shohei Ohtani character.
He's obviously not. Yeah. So he is considered by Bowden to be the seventh best free agent on the market this offseason. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, not seventh among infielders. He's like seventh among, with the only names ahead of him being names like Pete Alonso, Max Fried, Garrett Cole, if he were to opt out of his Yankees deal, he's got a player opt out. And then obviously guys like Juan Soto and Corbin Burns, guys like that. The prediction for Alex Bregman, well, here's what he says about Bregman. Bregman would love to finish his career as an Astro, but will the organization do enough to keep him? Houston has a history in free agency of saying goodbye to players such as Carlos Correa and George Springer, who both departed when the Astros weren't willing to commit to the long-term contracts they could land elsewhere. Bregman is a proven leader with elite skills in not chasing out of the strike zone. He has all the intangibles that winning organizations want. I agree with everything so far. His market range is well-defined, somewhere between what Matt Chapman got last month, which was 6 years, $151 million, and Nolan Arenado's contract with the Rockies / Cardinals, which was 8 years, $260 million. Astros GM Dana Brown has said the team will make Bregman an offer, but will it be close to how the rest of the industry views him? Okay.
Yeah.
I've got the prediction right here. Do you want the prediction here, Seth? And then
give it to me, Sean.
Okay, here it is. Seven, and do you think, would you do this? And do you think Jim Crane would do this?
Okay.
7 years.
No.
I know, right? I feel like, like it's almost like no. $185 million. So it's about the same per year as Chapman got
just one year longer.
Yeah.
I think the best we could hope for Jim Crane to stretch on this is 6 years, where they just, I mean, which is still a long extension for Jim Crane. I'd be really surprised if they go 7 years, unless it's front loaded the way that Altuve's is, to where it won't be hurting them as they go down the line.
Yeah.
You know, Roy Oswalt went the Jose Altuve route a couple days ago. He tweeted out, bring Bregman back.
He's super active on social media, Roy. He followed me on Twitter.
He followed me too. Yeah. And I was like, okay, is this a mass thing? I think it's an en masse thing, because I think on Instagram he's saying he'll follow you back if you follow him.
Oh, really?
So, okay. Yeah, he's going there. He's diving deep into the, I think he's getting involved in the media mix here. Good.
I would do this for Bregman. I would do 7 years, 185 for Bregman.
You would. Would Jim Crane do it?
I don't think so.
I don't think he would either.
I don't think it's a 0% chance, but if I had to pick a side, I would pick no. Like, he just, until I see him do it, then I'm gonna predict no.
I also think that there's a team out there, just as there were multiple teams out there for Carlos Correa, there's teams out there that, more than anything, I think they respect the performance in the postseason.
Yes.
And I think they look at Bregman as a guy that is looked at as a guy that helps the other guys around them, that does things the right way. He's just a super fanatical baseball nerd, even though he's already been paid. And he's consistently good in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's going to be a team out there that says, yeah, we need to get over the hump. This is one of the things. This is one of those, just like the Astros did back in 2017, whether you need veteran guys to come in and help the other guys see how to operate. There's going to be somebody out there that's willing to give them 7 years.
Well, and here's the thing. Here's the best team fits that Bowden has for Bregman.
Yeah.
He has the Astros, obviously. He has the Yankees, the Nationals, the Mariners, and the Tigers. And it's interesting to me The two that interest me the most would be the Yankees and the Tigers in this. One, because the Yankees always have the money to do whatever they want. That might be a reason to root for the Dodgers, honestly. Like, if the Yankees lose the World Series, do they feel compelled, hey, we're going to pay Soto and we're going to go get Bregman and we're going all in again trying to win this thing? The Tigers are the intriguing one to me because of where they are as a team. I've always thought Bregman, similar to what the Twins were kind of thinking with Correa, which is, hey, we got this young group that's ready to win, and this guy's been a winner at a high level. I could see the Tigers thinking the same thing about Bregman. I think Bregman's a safer bet than Correa was, especially medically. And A.J. Hinch is there. He's got a history with the manager there. And the Tigers have more money to spend than people think they do. They're just in a rebuild phase right now, but they've spent money before, the Tigers
have.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's not like they're
not a poverty
of
team.
Spending the money.
Right.
I guess then it becomes an interpersonal thing almost, where it was a nice redemption story for A.J. Hinch this offseason.
Yep.
I wonder if A.J. Hinch himself, like how he would feel about, like rekindling any more conversation about that. I feel like most Astros players and or managers, when it comes to all of that, any of the controversy, I think they're just in a mode, probably how the Patriots had to operate for years, where they're like, okay, people are going to say what they say. I'm not going to let it affect my personal decisions.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what's right and just move forward. So, but I think it's a consideration. And then does the Tigers organization want to bring that extra, talking point into the organization too?
It's a good point I hadn't thought of. My guess is I would guess that winning outweighs that, but I think it's an interesting wrinkle to the whole thing.
Well, they already hired A.J. Hinch, yeah, so it's not like they were afraid of the of the scrutiny or anything.
Good point. There's probably people screaming at their radios right now.
Yeah, I think I'm probably overthinking it.
You're just looking at all the angles. I think.
Well,
you know?
The other part of it is that other than Brian Cashman, everybody else in baseball seems to have moved on from it and doesn't really think it's a big deal at all.
Yep.
Like the most resoundingly, you hear this from other players, like, no, nobody thinks about that.
Right.
So I think that in the circles that these guys are in and around league meetings and everything, I don't think it's as much of a factor as maybe we wonder about.
The other big free agent that the Astros are losing in this article, and let me just say I'm real disappointed. He does the top 45 free agents, and I'm not saying Verlander is one of them, but I was hoping he would be because I really do want to see what a GM thinks Verlander should get this offseason because I have no clue what Verlander...
Yeah.
I could see some team that's got money just, like saying, hey, man, he dealt with a few things last year, but even if we get only 20 or 25 starts out of him, hey, might be worth 10 or 12 or 20 million, whatever. I don't know what the number is. Yusei Kikuchi. The Astros, Orioles, Tigers, and Twins are considered fits for Yusei Kikuchi. 3 years... I would do this. 3 years, $42 million for Yusei Kikuchi.
Ooh, yeah.
I would do that.
Yusei Kikuchi, I say... Give it to me. Kichi kichi koo.
14.
That tickles me.
$14 million a year.
I believe in 100% that the Astros car wash that they do on pitchers is going to stick with Kikuchi. And
he liked it too.
I'd be all about that. Yeah,
he liked it.
Plus, my hope and dream is that he becomes like the Yuli Gurriel for Japanese prospects.
I love that.
And it becomes all of a sudden Houston, who hasn't had a boatload of Japanese pitchers, just all of a sudden becomes the place that Japanese pitchers. Wait, hey, look. We know about the culture of Japanese baseball and just like how seriously they take it and just how focused they are. The way that kids come up over there. They just have a real appreciation for doing things the right way.
Yeah.
I feel like you could sell that, as like, hey, if you want to truly be the very best you can and all of the rest of it, yes. Look at what we did for Kikuchi.
Now,
yes.
He is competing with Shohei Ohtani for the hearts of Japanese people. That is a problem.
That's a bit of a... Well, no, but we're talking about...
just pitchers?
No. No, but this is the thing. Ohtani is going to Ohtani no matter where he is.
Yeah, that's true.
Kikuchi, it was a perfect blend of talent and environment. If anything, Ohtani is the argument against going to the Dodgers.
Yeah. There's more...
They didn't do a damn thing to help him. He's just Ohtani.
Yeah, that's right. There's more... There's way more kids in that bucket that Kikuchi was probably in, trying
right.
to trying to elevate your skill, then this...
Right, are you a 6'4" freak of nature?
Right.
No? Why don't you go do what Kikuchi did instead of trying to emulate Shohei Ohtani?
Glad we had this conversation. See, that's why we talk these things out.
Well, I got to the Japanese youth, I'm always very concerned that they're being, you know, molded by the wrong influences.
You talk about it all
the
time.
Ear.
Yeah, no.
So that's why I'm taking Japanese classes sporadically online.
On Duolingo, yes, of course. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Odds that matter to you, the Houston sports fan, your title chances for your teams and chances for award. Do we agree with Vegas right now on these things, including, boy, the Astros? Vegas still kind of in on the, they don't think the window's closed. We'll tell you just how much that window is firmly shut, according to, or window is open, I should say, according to Vegas. We'll get to that coming up next.